Today, I have a wonderful guest. I'd like to say an old friend, but given that neither of us are very old, I'm just going to keep it as friend, Rod Rougelet. He's actually American, but I think what he's involved in, recycling and thus sustainability, is entirely apropos of where we are in the world at the moment. Welcome, Rod. Thank you so much for joining me. And before we go on, we've actually got two four-legged Labrador friends with us.
We do.
So if there's any funny noises, it's them, not us.
Yes, and I would venture to say it's Charlie and not Finsa.
Well, anyway, they're splayed out on the floor, very happy and just taking a break. But Rod, thank you so much for joining me today, because I've always found the businesses that you're involved in incredibly interesting. And of course, they are about trying to improve how we live today. So what is the most exciting thing you're involved in at the moment?
My involvement, literally for over 30 years, has been in recycling and sustainability. Over 30 years, it's evolved quite a bit to the point where my primary focus today is on sustainable packaging for food. I'd say what's most exciting about that right now is that we've made a move this past April to backwards integrate and get closer to manufacturing. And so we acquired a new company in the US at the end of April. But if you look across the entirety of the 30 years, it began with simple recycling, the collection of bottles and cans, and moving those forward in the manufacturing process into the remanufacturing process. And over 30 years, I watched the business change. I watched it grow. I watched it struggle. I've seen parts of it fail. And so I think I probably have enough background to give you some good insights, and we can have a good conversation about it today.
Recycling and plastic are very high on the agenda on the west coast of America and California, which is where you hail from, because obviously everyone's very concerned about the plastic collecting in the Pacific Ocean.
Yes.
And it's having such a deleterious effect on the fish and the ocean and on our health. But if you take us out, it's a really bad effect on the ocean. So would you like to start from that point of view into where you started with recycling?
You know, let me start with where I started, and then we can...
Oh, like Mary Poppins, you start at the very beginning.
Exactly. I didn't bring my umbrella today. Where we started, it was at a point in time before plastics really were as dominant as they are today. And how I got into doing this really was by accident. I had a few years at business school where I thought I had dreams of starting a company, and I got a little distracted with all the different types of companies that I was exposed to. And I literally bumped into a classmate of mine in an intersection in San Francisco. And I said, I just saw something the other day. I think we should talk about it. And that moment in time literally became the largest single bottle and can recycling company in America. We grew that business and sold it. But the focus at the time was aluminum cans. That's where most recyclers focused on making their money. We operated within what's called a redemption state in the United States, where you put a deposit down at the grocery store and you bring the bottle or can back to get your money back. The economics of the business were such that aluminum cans were quite profitable, and people were very interested in not only getting their money back, but also the activity of doing something good for the environment was really just starting to grow. This was in the early 90s. In the mid 90s, though, I started noticing the soft drink vending machines were getting switched, and they went away from aluminum cans, and you saw more and more plastic bottles coming in. And for us, it was bad news from a business perspective. Set aside the issues around plastics, but from a pure business perspective, we started seeing that this shift was monumental. over the next 10 to 15 years, it became such a large shift that now today, globally, greater than 50% of all beverages sold are packaged in PET plastic. And PET is a dominating force, not only in beverage containers, which is one of the largest consumers of that polymer type, but it also goes into food packaging. So you'll buy tubs of salad or cut fruit or veg at the grocery store, and typically that's packaged in the same thing.
So equally well, the rise in plastic in the ocean began at that time.
Yeah, and it really was driven simply by cost, and cost only in the pure aspect of thinking of in our world dollars and cents. The beverage manufacturers found that they could differentiate their brand against another brand by the shape of the package, thus the shape you see on the bottle in front of you, versus the traditional shape of a can. But the cost per container was extraordinarily low, and over time got lower and lower. And so it was driven purely by cost. And what wasn't considered was the environmental cost of shifting from aluminum into a particular polymer type, this one being PET.
So how are we going to move back from all the plastic we're putting our drinks into, other than the fact that, you know, some of the soft carbonated drinks are not particularly good for us because they're full of sugar, and I know I try to avoid them, possibly not thinking sufficiently about the recycling, but thinking sufficiently about sweetness and sugars. They are very poor in nutrition value, in fact, are deleterious to our bodies and our health expectancy. So there's that side for me, but obviously I should be thinking more probably about the effect on the environment. So are you involved in anything taking it backwards or recycling of the plastic?
So I'm involved to this day. I'm involved in ways not only from a manufacturing perspective and a reuse of these containers, but I've kind of changed my thinking about what you and I think of and your audience thinks of as recycling today. I call it sort of the old school kinetic model of recycling. You throw that bottle in the bin, a truck comes and picks it up, the bottle is separated, it's compressed, it goes on another truck, which goes somewhere where these machines claw at it and break it down, they wash it, they then move it on, it's melted, and then it ends up back in that bottle or food packaging or your clothing. It works from a quality perspective, meaning we can take that bottle in almost any state, how dirty it is, the type of label, etc., and we can run it back through the system and end up with another food container.
But it sounds to me as if it's taking energy, water, and resources.
And this is
in terms of wildlife, nature, diversity, sustainability, it's still negative, isn't
it? It's negative. And this is where my thinking has evolved. The first step to help you understand why my thinking has evolved is you have to think, and I'll focus on beverage containers, but it applies across the spectrum of how we use those plastics. From the business side, the company that's putting their product in that package, as much as sustainability may be important to that company, the bottom line dollar that they make, the money that they make, is of the utmost importance because it allows them to continue to operate. And unless the container type can be recycled in a way that is truly motivating the company financially to go after it, it will only happen through subsidies. And the predominant source of or driving factor behind all of the containers that come in today for recycling is subsidy. It's either your local municipality subsidizing the recycling via the fees you're charged for the collection of your garbage and recycling. In the case of deposit states where nickels and dimes are put down on the container, it's the unrecycled bottles that carry the weight of funds that go back to pay for that plastic bottle getting recycled. Because on its own, the price per pound of virgin PET plastic is significantly less than the actual price per pound of what it takes to collect, to compress, to move, to break down, to pelletize,
to
and send
and
back.
Everything else and go back again.
And the only product to this day that truly makes economic sense on its own without subsidy is the aluminum can still. And so when you think about a glass bottle or a plastic bottle, in the absence of subsidy, it's not going to happen. And so...
So can I ask you a leading question about, oh, I call aluminium, mm-hmm. but if I say
excuse
aluminium,
me.
then what resources are needed to process an aluminium can?
So it's the process for aluminium, I'm trying, is really driven by the alternative. If aluminium is needed, the manufacturer will always buy a recycled aluminum product before they mine bauxite and extract alumina and then refine it down into aluminum. It's a heavily electrical intensive or energy intensive process.
So theoretically, if you had enough aluminum mm-hmm. cans in production and manufacture, you could keep reusing the ones that you had.
Right. You lose a fraction every time it goes around in the cycle. But the aluminum that's manufactured from a recycled can consumes about 10% of the electricity that is used when driving alumina out of bauxite. It's extraordinarily efficient, and so you would constantly seek a recycled grade of aluminum before you went back to the mine and dug out bauxite.
Because what's interesting to me is obviously all of us living on this planet are perfectly idle and quite like our way of life, if we're honest with ourselves and to other people, as we are. It's convenient, it's simple, it's easy. So we're not necessarily going to dispense with all that we're used to. But I would happily, without much thought, swap a plastic bottle of water for an aluminium or aluminium one, or the same with orange juice, or if glass is better than plastic, swap to that, rather than continue to use plastic, which is one of the worst things to keep trying to turn around. So that, to my mind, is very interesting, and I hope those who are listening, it'll just give us all pause for thought. That's all I'm trying to suggest, I think. How fascinating.
Well, and I'll help you get into my mind a little bit, because A, everyone should do their part, regardless of whether or not you have a local recycling program, whether you have access to a bottle deposit program where you can take it in and it's easily recycled. Everyone should do their part. We should all consume less. So to me, I would call that pre-cycling. Before you make that purchase decision.
Well, actually, we've got a drinking water tap here. Mm-hmm. So if you come along, I have got a water bottle mm-hmm. on a strap, because then I'm less likely to lose it. And it's got nail varnish saying mine on it. but that's to my mind. So I actually filled it with just tap water.
Yeah.
Because that's what we all used to do. We used to clean water to have as tap water, or boil it to have as tea, being great tea drinkers, which I know you're not in America. But over here, obviously we are, and partly I think because you're purifying the water that you'll have with it. But fill water bottles up from the tap.
Yeah. So just think before you make the purchase, whether it's the container you can bring, a different container type, a larger container per volume of material. All of that is the beginning to consuming less.
So we're trying to also use, obviously, paper and card, because that seems to us to be easier to both take out and put back again. Is that a correct assumption? Or where are you?
Sometimes it actually isn't. And this is where information needs to become very clear so that people can understand, is my action adding any value? Is my action actually detriment to the end state that I'm trying to achieve? Or is my action appropriate or perhaps in need of improvement? The reason I say it depends is sort of like everyone who sort of classifies all plastics as bad. Plastic in and of itself is a misnomer in that the name plastic is the generic term for a polymer, which is a chemical chain. This bottle that I'm pointing to on the table is a particular polymer. And if you took a different polymer and broke it down into very small pieces, which is one of the moves that occur in recycling, if you tried to mix those two polymer types, they wouldn't actually end up in a state that is reusable because the polymer chain will have changed. It won't allow you to produce whatever product you're trying to produce. And so there are some plastics that are much worse than others. Some plastics are actually a better choice than using certain types of fiber, paper or cardboard, as you said. But until we truly understand what the collective impact is, it's extraordinarily hard for people to make the right choice every single time. So we all have to try, but I think in the absence of some central force pushing for the right, it's going to be the dollar or money that drives the company to make the best financial decision, and they will do that all day long if they know that it has the right sustainable impact as well.
So, I also think it's the customers, because if we bought less plastic bottles, then they would stop making as many.
Yeah.
If we filled our water bottles from a tap, there would be less need for plastic water bottles, which might be useful in some circumstances.
Yeah.
And it is the customers to whom the companies are reacting, which I think is always very interesting. Fun enough, in a small way for us with COVID and waste, because during COVID we couldn't allow people to pick things off shelves or share food, we made, on smaller tours, plates of food per person. So how much waste was there? Zero. Because you didn't have so many sandwiches left over or so many chocolate pots. Everybody had what was on their plate. It's an old-fashioned way of doing it. We could certainly have standard or vegetarian, but that's the way we went with it. And it has actually been revolutionary in terms of our cost. So we're carrying on with it. So there is a few things which have been very good. And again, it's trying to minimize the waste as we go on. And any waste food obviously then goes off with any of the staff or teams left over back home.
Yeah.
And mothers are very happy with scones.
When I said, I think that the old line kinetic method of recycling is about to change, it actually sort of goes to what you're talking about. In the old line method, everyone focused on ultimately the cost per pound of recycling it and getting it back into the stream. But as we hear today, as we experienced here in the UK last week, the excessive heat, or record heat, we should say, carbon is becoming a focal point. And I believe that one of the things that's going to shift the way we package and manufacture and ultimately dispose of or recycle waste is a different language, or a different measuring stick, if you will, away from just financial and more towards carbon. Because if you start to look at the kinetic method of recycling, and you look at it through the lens of what is the carbon emission along the way, I think what you'll find is many times product A, and I don't want to identify one because it changes in different use cases, but product A, which we think and feel as being better for the environment, is actually significantly worse. And the combination of reevaluating what the carbon output is of the entire process, along with material science, I think is actually going to significantly change for the better what we have wrestled with for the last 30, 40 years and think about today.
Well, we've been talking about and wittering on about for too long without doing it. And I also think it's exactly as you're saying, it's also minimizing what goes on in. And the idea that, you know, we need to eat seasonally and locally. Mm-hmm. And it's about, to my mind, farms and food, not manufacturing and processing.
Yeah.
So we need to think about where it comes from. And you know, you've got a tomato, it doesn't need loads of blooming packaging, nor does it need to be processed.
Right.
We need to eat and enjoy the food that's there, so not import from thousands of miles away and then say we're going to offset everything we've created with other things, because that's not minimizing anything. It's just making in our heads, our imagination, we're maintaining the status quo.
Yeah.
We do deceive ourselves, don't we?
And as someone who has a lot of experience in it, I can be completely surprised as well. You know, one of our companies takes aluminum cans and we turn that back into pie pans and lasagna trays and foil for your household wrap. We do that and it's virtually entirely recycled. The other company takes PET bottles, mostly water and soda bottles, and we convert that back into food packaging. And we were approached years ago by a company who said, we want to know if you can design this package made out of recycled plastic. And again, not trying to identify a brand name or the product, our first response was, this will never work. It's extraordinarily expensive to manufacture something of that size with plastic because of what it was containing. And you are going to get eaten alive by the press because of the immediate connotation with the amount of plastic that you're consuming, regardless of the fact that it was 75% post-consumer content recycled plastic. And they said, just bear with us. Let's see if you can make it. Let's design this package. So we did, and we designed a beautiful package. That package is in use today and actually quite popular. And once we were done, they said, okay, let's cost it out. We really are onto something here. And what we learned was they had already begun to change the measuring stick from dollars to carbon. And what we learned was by packaging this product in this way, it completely changed how it was picked in the field, moved via trucks to a distribution facility, went from the distribution facility to the store, and then ultimately was picked up by you in the store and put on your shelf at home. And what it did was it reduced the spoilage of that product by 30 to 35%, which meant they shipped fewer trucks. That product sat on your counter for 3 or 4 days more because it wasn't going to spoil. And in the end, not only was it a financially viable move for them, but from a carbon perspective, it was the epitome of a double bottom line win. They won dollars and cents, they won on carbon emissions, and you, the consumer, had you bought that package, you, the consumer, actually won because you had fresher food that remained on your counter for a longer time. And I was the first one to say, this will never work, you're crazy. But it actually kind of changed my thinking. And one of the most interesting companies that I find out there today is a company in the U.S., and for those who are in California, it's based out of Davis, California, right outside Sacramento, is a company called Origin Materials. Origin is one of a number of companies, but I think they lead in this, where they've said, we don't need to take oil and crack it and convert it into plastic. That process emits massive amounts of CO2. And what they've done, and a number of other companies around the world have done, is figured out how to take technically what's called lignocellulosic fiber. It could be rice hulls or grasses or cardboard. Yeah. In this case, they use wood waste. And they can create the exact same polymer that's in that bottle, and it's carbon negative because they're taking waste wood that otherwise, when it breaks down or is burned, would emit carbon back into the atmosphere. So it's a carbon sink rather than an emitter. And now they're figuring out that they can modify the polymer away from PET into something called PEF. So through material science and through some carbon scoring, their product is actually cost competitive with oil-based PET at prices of oil down to $20 a barrel versus $105 a barrel where we are today. And it will evolve into something called PEF, a different polymer type, which now will create that same look and feel that your PET bottle has, but it actually biodegrades.
You can then collect it, recycle it. Do you have to process it or not?
You still have to process it in a similar way, but it checks so many boxes because in the case of plastic, the recycling rate is actually very low, and so much of it gets thrown away.
Yeah.
And as much as we don't want a world where everything is throwaway, I don't want a world of everything being throwaway. For that which is not recycled, you may live in an area that doesn't have conveniently located recycling facilities. You have the ability to buy a better product for the environment, both in terms of carbon emissions, and ultimately when it goes to the landfill, it's no longer there for 1,000 years. It's there for 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 years. It's still not the perfect solution.
But it's a better solution,
I think. It's a better solution. And my view is you're going to see all the beverage manufacturers shift to that polymer type, maybe not origin materials, but they will shift to this new PEF material probably within the next 10 years. Once it's cost competitive and once the advantages are clear, they want to do the right thing sustainably, but if it doesn't afford them the right price point, they won't make the shift. Well, I believe it's all there. And so in the matter of 5 years it starts, and 10 years I think it'll be complete. And that'll be a massive improvement relative to
where we are today.
Sort of the scourge that we see today and the bad feelings that the word plastics bring up in most people's minds.
What I would take away from this is that recycling the normal plastic water bottles does not really help anything very much. But I think I've read that aluminum or aluminium is now once more on the way up. Is that correct?
It is correct. Probably for the first time in 15 years, aluminum production for beverage containers is on its way up. And you're seeing water starting to be packaged in aluminum amongst other beverages.
Well, that's great, because I know if you put it in glass is so heavy that effectively it takes more resources to transport it. But Rod, if you could change something, if you could say one thing that would make a difference, what would that be? Put you on the spot.
It's a magic wand moment.
Magic wand.
If I could bring the mass scale production of PEF forward to be readily available today, I think that polymer would have the biggest single impact on the plastics problem that we've been discussing most of today.
Okay, so let's throw that in the world, throw that out into the world and say, let's do it.
Okay.
So I just want to, I think, say thank you so much for joining me. I think I'm going to be hopefully refilling my water bottle. I just hope that everyone listening has found this as interesting as I have in terms of where we're sitting today, what each of us can do just to change our behaviour by 5 or 10%.
Every little bit helps.
And every little helps, doesn't it? Thank you, Rod, so much.
Thanks for having me.
Hello, this is Lady Carnarvon, and just to say, please do subscribe to this podcast. Then you can be first on the list every time it comes out.